So last time I managed to misstate the strong approximation theorem. Obviously, for GQ to be dense in GAF, you must have, well, if GR itself was compact, then GQ couldn't be dense in here, because, loosely speaking, if GR was compact, then that would force GQ to be small, and it couldn't be dense in here. And more precisely, GZ, or an arithmetic subgroup, remember, is discrete. At least I stated it's discrete in GAF and GR. So if GR is compact, then GZ has to be finite. And therefore, it can't be dense in here. And therefore, GQ can't be dense. Obviously, it's necessary to have this extra condition. So he also said then new notes say, so added 11 pages to the notes. I think they're 25 to 35. So the first pages are the same. So you printed out so I just added them on the end. So if you printed out the first 24 pages, then you only have to print the last 11. So they're already on the web, I think. So last time we were discussing connected Chamorro varieties, so let me just review a little. So we had a semi-simple group and Hermitian symmetric domain, and we had an action. Yeah, when I was setting this up, actually, if you remember, I had an extra condition, which meant that when I applied the strong approximation theorem, this condition here held. Okay. So we had the situation, and the condition was that GX transitively should be, what I want, GR plus X. So this is a semi-simple group over Q. So GR plus X transitively on D, and the stabilizer of any point is compact. That was the situation. And then we can consider all the locally symmetric varieties, gamma mod D, D mod gamma, I should say. And let me just call this condition. Well, we have a group. We have another algebraic group over R, which is an adjoint group. And HR plus is the automorphism group of D plus. And the relation between this group and this group, well, we have a map from the real part of this group to this group, and what it factors through the map from here to, from, we have a map from D over R H, and it factors through the adjoint group, because this is an adjoint group, so the center of this is trivially, so it factors through the adjoint group. But this, so we have two adjoint groups, and if you know the theory of adjoint groups over the real numbers, they're just products of simple things. So we have this is onto, and so this is a product, so G add over R is a product of H times the compact group conditions. And then we saw in the example that there may be this compact thing. So H is a group that lives only over R. G lives over Q, And G itself could be simple, and the example G itself is simple, but over R it broke up into a product of simple groups, and some were compact and some were non-compact. And in the map from here to here, the compact ones go to zero and the non-compact ones map isomorphically. Now, given the situation, we can think back to the first lecture. We get, if we choose a point, let's call it a beef point for D, then we get a, out of this, we get a homomorphism from U1, remember U1 is a circle group, to the automorphism group of D, so let's snap it into HR. And it had the property that U0Z acts as multiplication by Z on the tangents on the tangent space at the point D. So the point was that by assumption we there's the symmetry at the point zero acted as multiplication by minus one, and then just by using some differential geometry one can see that that implies that there's a whole action of U1 on the whole on the manifold, which fixes, so there's an action of U1 on the manifold that fixes the point and actually acts on the tangent space in that fashion, yeah. And I at least listed the properties that this has, and they more or less characterize it. So the only characters of U1 on the Lie group, Lie algebra of H, are 1, Z, and Z inverse. From the adjoint, this acts on the Lie algebra, and I claim, oh, there should be a C in here, right? On the complexified Lie algebra. In general, U1 might act on a complex vector space through characters Z to the N. What I'm saying here is that only one Z and Z inverse turn up. And the other thing that was crucial was that add U0 minus 1 is a Cartan involution. For H. And I also stated, at least, that this goes backwards. So if you're given a homomorphism, if you're given a semi-simple, well, given an adjoint group over R plus a homomorphism like that, then you can go back and reconstruct the Hermitian symmetric domain out of it. Huh? No, it's minus one. Yeah. C H if you want this. Okay, so let's call this condition here. SU1. Let's call this condition SU2. So in other words, so given this initial data defining the connected Shimura variety, we get a homomorphism from U1 into HR. Now, we have this homomorphism here, U0, and I can define a homomorphism from here into the product just by making it the trivial homomorphism in this, to this factor. So z will go to whatever it does in here, and z will go to just 1 in here. So I get, out of this, I get a homomorphism. So in other words, just by doing the trivial thing on the compact thing, I can get a homomorphism from U1 into the real points of the adjoint group here. Now the trivial observation I want to make is that this homomorphism still satisfies both these two conditions here. So I claim that when you consider U0 as mapping into here, let's just call it U, from here to here, still has these two properties because the Lie algebra of G add is just the Lie algebra of H cross the Lie algebra of this, and U1 is acting trivially here, so it's acting as 1 on the Lie algebra of this. So obviously this U has the property SU1, and it also has a property that had U minus 1 is still a Cartan involution, because what did it mean to be a Cartan involution? It meant that we call this theta, then if you go look at the complex points, then the things that satisfy this equation form a compact group. Well, the theta on this component here is trivial. Everything's trivial here. We're sending everything to 1. But so this condition here is just that G bar is equal to G, but this is just saying that the element actually belongs down in here, so, and this is a compact group. So if you have a compact real group, then the trivial map is a Cartan involution. That's the only case. So the upshot is that, pulling things back, we see that from this initial down-to-earth data defining a connected Chamorro variety, we get the following. So let me say that by choosing a base point, I want to be fussy. So I get G a semi-simple group over Q plus a homomorphism into G add R satisfying SU1 and SU2. And this goes both ways. Given this data, like this, I can reconstruct the Hermitian symmetric domain out of this data. Now, I claim in some ways this is much better than this. If you know some group theory, algebraic groups, then I can explain this to you in 5 minutes. And I just have a semi-simple group and a homomorphism from here to here, satisfying some group theory conditions. Over here, this is, in a sense, much more complicated, because here I have a Hermitian symmetric domain, and that's already a complicated thing to define, and so on and so forth. This is somehow cleaner and simpler. So instead of giving this data to define a connected Chamorro variety, I can give this data here, which is, what? Oh, well, this is, I said this in lecture 1, but yeah, but it's true, I didn't give a very good explanation of how you got D backwards from this. But the idea is that, the conditions imply that the stabilizer of this map, the commutator of this map, is a compact. And and then the rest of the, so you get a, so this is a Lie group, modular compact Lie group, so you get a manifold at least. And different ways of saying it, but I guess I don't really want to go into an explanation anymore, but I said it a little bit more in the notes, but the point is I did try to explain at least how you go from Hermitian symmetry domain to this data, but from this data you can in fact go backwards. Of course that's kind of crucial, but so we have this. It's somehow simpler. And now I want to restate this a little bit. Yeah, let me say that this is not actually one-one correspondence between these things and these things, or the equivalence of categories or anything, because over here, I have a I have to choose a special point here. So if I started with this data, then the U would correspond to a particular point in D. So this is sort of a subtle point perhaps. But we don't want our connected Shimura varieties to have some special point. All points should be the same. So how can I, so to go from here to here, I had to choose a point in order to get a U into here, which acted in that way on the tangent space of that particular point. What happens if I choose a different point? Well, if I choose G times the point O, then the map I get here is just what you would hope is just the conjugate of this. So if you don't want to have any special point, then you can restate this as saying that, so no, not choosing a special point, then we get G just as above, a semi-simple algebraic group over Q, plus, instead of just one map like this, a G add plus R plus conjugacy class. Of homomorphisms satisfying SU1 and SU2. This is okay. I mean, I'm just trying to be. This just complicates things, right? But if you have a GR plus conjugacy class of maps like this, and one of them satisfies these conditions, they all satisfy those conditions. So you should just think of this as, well, we're not really interested in the whole conjugacy class. I mean, we just think of, we have a map like this, and we don't really, we only care about it up to conjugacy. That's probably a better way of saying it, but I just want to say things the way that Deline says them, so. So now we want to go one step further. And so if we take C cross, think of this as a Lie group, real Lie group, then there's a map from here to U1, which then Z goes to Z over Z bar. Now instead of considering maps from U1 to here, we can just compose them with this map here and consider them from C cross. So now I want to consider G a semi-simple group over Q plus, well, one map or a conjugacy class of map that doesn't make too much difference. So it should be a G add plus conjugacy class of map. So H from here to Gad. Here, of course, I'm doing nothing. All I'm doing is I'm taking these U's and I'm composing them with this obvious map here. And now, what are the conditions SU1 and SU2 become? Let's call them SV1. Should be provocative. So C cross, well, obviously, how do you translate these conditions? Well, in the obvious way, you get that C cross acts on Lie algebra of G, complex Lie algebra, through the characters Z over Z bar 1 and Z bar over Z. And what does SV2 become? Well, what goes to minus 1? You can take I here, then I over I bar is minus 1. So SU2 translates into add HI is a Cartan involution. Okay, so now you're happy. So you can go from here to here, and going backwards, there's one thing to check going backwards. I mean, you have to check that these conditions imply that this map actually factors through U1. But you see that this condition here tells us that, so what's the kernel of this? It's R cross. So I have to, in order that all these things come from things like this, I have to check that anything like that takes a real number to 1, so the action factors through C cross modulo R cross. But that follows from this. You see, what this is telling us is that C cross acts on the Lie algebra in this fashion here. So this tells us that any real number will act as 1 on the Lie algebra. And since that tells us, in fact, that it will act as 1 on the group itself. So to just simply summarize, to give this data here, which is sort of the naive, obvious data to define a connected Shimura variety, is the same as to give this data or as to give this data over here. Now, this is, conventionally, this is the way, so. This is what's called a connected Shimura datum. Okay, so connected Shimura datum is simply a semi-symbol group over Q. Quantity class of maps from C cross into the adjoint group. We don't need to put the plus there. It certainly goes under the identity component. Satisfying those two conditions here. And then, given this, we can go back to here. We can go back to there, and we can go back to here. Okay. And now the point is that these are connected Shimura. This is connected Shimura datum, and this is connected Shimura variety. And now next thing we want to do is genuine Shimura variety. So, connected Shimura variety is not a Shimura variety. It should be hyphened in there. But. So you might think, well, what's wrong with connected Shimura variety? Why do we need something more, even more complicated than a connected Shimura variety? Now there are two ways. So what's wrong with this? Well, if you're coming at this from Langlands theory, there's one obvious defect in this, and that is that I have a semi-simple group here. Langlands theory, one semi-simple groups are no good. You want reductive groups. So you want big centers. But from the perspective of just Shimura varieties, then there's one defect of connected Shimura varieties, and that's the following, that we want to look at the moment we have algebraic varieties over the complex numbers, we want to look at canonical models over number fields. Now, if you take the upper half plane, modulo gamma n, so this is just a nice modular curve, and that has a canonical model, and it's naturally defined over the field you get by joining the n through to 1 to Q. It's not naturally defined, it's not defined over Q, it's defined over the field you get by adjoining an amplitude of 1 to Q. Huh? Ah, it's big N, right? Same N. So I better write it. Now, we really want to consider Shimura variety as the inverse system of these varieties. So we want to consider the whole lot together. Now, so in the classical case, we want a canonical model. Well, this piece is going to be over this field, but if I take a larger n, so I get a smaller group, that's going to be over a bigger field. So I have this wonderful, over the complex numbers, I have this wonderful tower inverse system of algebraic varieties, but when I look at models over number fields, it's clear that there's going to be no way that I'm going to get them all defined over one number field. The different varieties are going to be defined over bigger and bigger fields. Well, actually, I should say that Shimura found an elegant way around this, so he really studies towers of varieties defined over bigger and bigger fields. It's quite elegant, but nobody does it that way anymore. Deligne found a more elegant way. So the point is, suppose I have let's take a very simple variety. Suppose I take the line x equal I. So this is a line over the complex numbers, and it's naturally defined over Q adjoined I. Now how can out of this can I get a variety that's naturally defined over Q? Well, I can take, say, x squared equal 1. So this is defined over Q. And when I look at it over the complex numbers, it breaks up as two lines, x equal plus, this equation becomes x minus 1, x plus 1 equals 0. I always do this wrong. Yeah, this equation becomes this. So, in other words, I have this defined over the complex numbers. It's not defined over Q, but if I take this one here, this equation here, then I get two conjugate lines over the complex numbers. This one's defined over Q. So, this is a very simple example, but if you have a variety defined over a number field, you can always get a variety defined over Q by taking a disjoint union of copies of the variety and its conjugates. You can always do that. Essentially, all you're doing is taking the equations and you're multiplying all the equations by the conjugates of the equations. So if you have a variety B over number field F, you can get a variety defined over Q at the cost of passing from connected varieties to non-connected varieties. Now, the connected Chamois varieties, the pieces of the connected Chamois variety were all connected varieties. And Deline's idea is that we should define a Chamois variety so that the pieces are non-connected Chamois varieties, but they're all defined over the same number field. Now, we could, of course, you could do that in an ad hoc way, just piece by piece, but he found a systematic way of doing it so that you get a new family of varieties, a new tolerance inverse system of varieties, and this one is sitting inside there, but these new varieties are not connected. And so they have a better chance of being defined over a smaller field. And in fact, it turns out that every level of the new Chamois variety is defined over the same number field. That's the key reason why he wants to go to Chamois varieties rather than connected Chamois varieties. So, after all this preparation, it's not so hard to write the thing down. So what I want is now G is a reductive group over Q. And I want maps from here into, well, in this case, it'll be into GR. In some ways, here we had a semi-simple group, and we only had maps into the adjoint group. Here I want them actually into the reductive group. So I want a congruous, I want maps like this, and I want, well, you can take one if you like, but to do things right, one should take a GR congruency class of these things. And they should satisfy the conditions SV1 and SV2, which I wrote over there. Huh? Well, it's this is connected. Oh, no, it's GR. Yeah, over there, everything was supposed to be connected. Over here, we don't care. So it really is GR, right? So. Yeah. So the GR congruency class is called X. And let me just check that these conditions, if I wrote them, just check that I wrote these conditions down in such a way they applied over here. So yeah, what is a Cartan, I should say, Cartan involution on GAD. Here it doesn't matter what I say on G yet or G. Here it does matter. So, conjugation by this is a Cardan involution on. On the adjoint group. Well, this has a center. So the Cardan involution is trivial on the center. It doesn't do anything to the center. So unless the center is compact, it won't be a Cardan involution on the whole group. So that's condition. So, and I should write down this third condition, which is the same one I had, so that I could apply the strong approximation theorem. I want that some non-triviality condition, so what do I want? I guess I want the GED has no factor, no Q factor. H such that HR is compact. I should really say that over here as well. But this is not such a... important condition. Okay. So this whole thing, so the G and the X, the conjugacy class of maps, like satisfying this condition, is called a Shimura datum. Appear. Yeah, that's word for word the same. SV2 is word for word the same as well. SV3 is word for word the same. It's just that over here, G is a reductive group, and H is going into the group GR itself rather than into the adjoint group as it was over there. That's the data defining a Shimura variety. What is a Shimura variety? So, same. So the Shimura variety, well, so of course it's not just going to be, it's not going to be a connected variety of the complex numbers, and it's not just going to be one, there's going to be a whole family of them, of course. So we take K to be a compact open subgroup of GAF. We're going to be talking about all these things all the time. Maybe I should say a word about what a compact open subgroups of this look like. Well, I just want to make the point that if I have two of them, then the intersection is open, and these are compact. So this is open and a compact thing. So the intersection of any two of them is a finite index in each of them. And that's sort of the primeval compact open subgroup is that. So all the compact open, this is sort of the standard compact open subgroup if you have some sort of Z structure. And you should think of all the other compact open subgroups as just differing from this by a finite amount. So you can think of them as being coming from this, but you're opposing some congruence condition on a finite number of primes. So then, given a compact open subgroup, the Shimura variety is a double coset space. Okay. So this initially is just a set, or maybe a topological space. So X is the conjugacy class of maps. You start off with one, if you like, and just take the conjugacy class of them. GR conjugacy class of them. And this is the action is the same as before, namely QX A K is equal to QX Q A K. So Q, I mean, it should be QX on well, let's call it H. Q acts on this by conjugation. It acts on here and then acts on here. So there's this double coset space which we have to try and figure out. So the first thing we should do is try and figure out the x. How do I think of it? This is what I want to explain. I mean, right now, it's just a set. But it better become. First, what I want to do is I want to show to you that this, in fact, is a finite union of locally symmetric varieties, in other words. It's a finite union of gamma mod Ds that we were looking at. The first thing I want to see. So if we look at the x, well, we have a map from G to the adjoint group of G. Oh yeah, maybe I should give an example. So, of course, we could take G to be GL2, and we could take H to be the map from here to GL2. R, which turns A plus BI to AB minus BA. G is a reductive group, so we map it to the adjoint group, namely this is just G modulo the center. Now every time you have a map, so this is surjective. Now, if we look at the real points, if we have a surjective map of, so we have a map from GR to GADR. Now, just because this is a surjective map of algebraic groups, it doesn't mean that this map here is as surjective as a map on points. But if you look at the identity component, I claim that this is always true, not just in this situation, but the identity component here will map onto the identity component here. You put a plus in here. The point is there's a surjective map on the tangent spaces, which will tell you that some large open subset of this maps onto some large open subset of that, and that's enough to tell you that the identity component here maps onto the identity component here. So if I have an H here, I can compose it with this projection map onto the quotient. And if I start off with an H satisfying these conditions, I'll get an H bar over here, satisfying the same conditions. Well, except here the G, if you like, is G add. Now, if I look at the conjugacy class, the GR conjugacy class of H, well, it may have many different connected components. But if I look at, so this is the connected component of X. In other words, if homomorphisms from conjugate homomorphisms from here to here, and call it X bar. This in fact will be the GR plus conjugacy class of H. So the kinetic components of X, they have a natural topology coming from the fact, from as a quotient of this, from GRX. So GR obviously acts on X, and the kinetic components, so the identity component of GR will act transitively on a kinetic component here. So I have a map from here to makes this the GAD plus conjugacy class. Of H bar. Okay. So this is the GR plus conjugacy class of H. This is the GR conjugacy class of H bar. And I claim that this will be a bijection. The point is, if two H's become conjugate here by an element of this, then the element itself lifts to here. So they're already conjugate here. Well, more, the point is that the kernel of this map acts trivially on the H's. The kernel of this map is the center of this group. So when you conjugate, the way you conjugate only depends on the image of this and here. And since this map is onto, you can see that this is a bijection. In the, when you conjugate this, you're really conjugating by something in here. The center actually conjugates trivially. So there's a bijection from here to here. Now this thing here acquires the structure of a Hermitian symmetric domain. From over there, and therefore this acquires the structure of a Hermitian symmetric domain from this bijection. So using the relation between Hermitian symmetric domains and certain maps into groups, one sees that each kinetic component of X acquires in a natural way the structure of a Hermitian symmetric domain. So X is a disjoint union of Hermitian symmetric domains. Now, the other thing we can see is so let's take X plus to be a kinetic component of X. This is a finite disjoint union of kinetic. It's finite disjoint union of Hermitian symmetric domains. Then, just as we were considering last lecture, in the case of the connected Chamorro body, we can look at the map from here into GQ. Modulo X cross GAF. Modulo K. Then, remember, in the situation we were looking at yesterday, we got a bijection of this with if we put gamma equal to GQ with that K, we got a bijection from here to here. In this case, we don't have a strong approximation theorem. So, but the same argument I gave, it's like a trivial argument, tells us that this injects into here. No, the X over here. This injects into. Well, maybe I'll give the argument. So. Unfortunately, I erased what gamma is, so it's GQ intersect K. So what's the argument? So we send X goes to X1, so if X prime and X go to the same thing, if these are equal, that means that X prime is Q times X. Let me just write the action in this fashion, and 1 is equal to QK, where Q is in here and K is in here. And remember, this condition here tells us that Q is actually in here, and this condition tells us that the X and X prime are in the same orbit. So we get an injection from here into here, and GQ intersect K. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I guess that adds an extra problem. But anyway, it's still true. Yeah, the point he was making is that GQ might map X, this kinetic component, to a different kinetic component. So in order to get something that stabilizes this, I ought to put a GQ plus in there, a plus in the GQ. Well, now the point is that what we have is a map from here to GAD. We have a map from here to add automorphisms of X plus, X plus. I'll put a plus. I put pluses on everything. So you have gamma sitting inside here. In fact, it's sitting inside the rational points. And this, by definition, is a congruent subgroup here. And I stated that when you have a surjective map of groups, then congruent subgroups need not go to congruent. When you have a surjective map of Q groups, congruent subgroups need not go to congruent subgroups, but arithmetic subgroups do go to arithmetic subgroups. So when you push the gamma n over to here, you get an arithmetic group. And by this is a thing, if this is a Lie group for the moment, if you like, then by definition, what it means for a discrete subgroup of a Lie group to be arithmetic, it means it comes from an arithmetic group like this, where the kernel of this map is compact. So this tells us this thing over here really is the sort of thing we're looking at before, namely it's the quotient of a Hermitian symmetric domain by an arithmetic subgroup. And maybe I should take K small enough so this is torsion free or something. Something's torsion free. Torsion free when you get over here. And with a little more effort, you can check that this thing is a finite disjoint union of these things. So That's the way you should think of it. But of course, you want to know a lot more. I mean, this is. Let me state one more. Of course, I got to. What we want to do is you want to study this in detail. So the, let me say, just state one result. So, yeah, so. So my claim is, first of all, that these conditions here actually give you all this when you for the adjoint group, and therefore you get a make this realizes X is a disjoint union of Hermitian symmetric domains using what we were doing over there, and then the double coset space can be realized as a finite union of things that look like that, and those things are the things that the Bailey-Borel and Borel theorems apply to. So they're disjoint union of arithmetic, local symmetric, locally symmetric varieties. So we get the same situation and same results as when we're working with connected Shimura varieties. Namely, we have algebra. First of all, we have, if you take the case, capital K small enough, these things are complex manifolds, and they're in fact algebraic varieties. They have unique structures of algebraic varieties, not connected algebraic varieties. And you get a whole tower of them. If K is smaller, then you get a map from the Shimura variety for the, well, the thing with the K, smaller K into the one with the bigger K. So we get a tower of non-connected varieties out of this. And let me point out one key fact, that is that, so given a Shimura datum, we can get a connected Shimura datum. Namely, we take the drive group for the semi-simple group, and well, we have to make a choice. We choose a connected component of the X, and we consider X, think of X. Well, we just. As Holmes from C cross to G add R rather than. So by composition, we get a conjugacy class of maps here. So I'll put a bar on it to think of it this way. X bar is choose a kinetic component here and then compose with the maps to the map to G at R. So we get this. So given a Shimura datum, you can get a connected Shimura datum by choosing a connected component of X. And then if you look at that variety up there, what we can do is we can take the kinetic component of this algebraic variety that contains. The derived group. Yeah, we definitely take the derived group of G. No, when we're dealing with connected Shimura datum, we had a semi-simple group in the and the maps went into the adjoint group. Yeah. So yeah. So So let me just state the result. So given this connected Shimura datum, you can make a connected Shimura variety. Just all the quotients of this by the correct arithmetic groups. On the other hand, given the Shimura datum, I can make a Shimura variety, which is just the inverse system of all those things up there. Now, every time I have one of those, I can look at the kinetic component that contains the points x1 for x belong to x plus. So the statement is that if you take a Shimura datum, make the Shimura variety, choose a kinetic component of X, look at the corresponding kinetic components of all these non-connected varieties up there, and that has a canonical identification with the connected Shimura variety coming from the corresponding connected Shimura data. No. This is a lot easier if I do assume that G-derived is simply connected. So what I'm going to do next time, well, I'm going to look at some examples of these things and see what the points look like. But also, I want to study this in the case that G-derived is simply connected when it's much simpler and see what the kinetic components are and see what this isomorphism looks like a lot better. So the idea is that this thing is just a bunch of copies of connected Shimura varieties. We want to see that more explicitly than I have done so far.